It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, are you stumped by that very difficult problem of shopping this Christmas? An ideal solution is the Lucky Strike Christmas gift. 500 Luckies, 25 packages of 20 each, packed in a handsomely embossed gift box in the modern smart color, winter white. Remember, servicemen themselves have voted cigarettes their number one preference. So the Lucky Strike Christmas gift gives them just what they want. Ask to see it at your favorite cigarette counter. And incidentally, you'll be glad to know that there's no extra charge for this exquisite packaging. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike provides a quartet of colossal, well, almost, intellects, and invites you to reduce their mental stature. You provide the questions, and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is must, you get the Junior Britannica, plus a $50 war bond, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits the questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, the only kind of show that we know how to put on is one that's go as you please and completely unrehearsed, and that's the kind we do put on. And the board tonight includes our three stalwarts, John Kieran, Franklin P. Adams, and Oscar Levin, and as our charming guest, the versatile actress, radio star, and author, you may have read her witty book, Past Imperfect, Miss Ilka Chase. We're going to begin with a arrangement of certain letters of the alphabet. Tell me just where you'd find the three arrangements. Let's see if we can get two out of three. The first E, Y-U-I-O-P.
Well, I have one, two.
On any typewriter?
Yes.
What is the...
across.
Well,
down.
Below the figures, which would be on the top, the exclamation, ordinary letters.
Yes, that's right.
P-O-I-U-I on one side, P-O-I-U-I working backwards from the other.
Yes, good.
I didn't know that, Mr. Fadiman, because I write longhand on a yellow pad.
Oh, I thought you did say that. Now, here's another arrangement. M-N-O-P-R-S. Mr. Levin.
For your eyesight.
No.
Well, I can't see, and it looked like that to me.
No, it's a good guess. M-N-O, these are capital letters. M-N-O, and then another.
Is that a Russian alphabet?
P-R-S, no. Let's have a guess on this.
It's Greek, from Menapolis.
You can't pronounce it, darn. It's the telephone dial. There are two sets of a telephone dial. They're arranged M-N-O-P-R-S. There isn't any Q. Maybe you think there is a Q, Mr. Levin.
I don't know anybody with a Q.
No. Now, that gives us one wrong. Now, here's another set of arrangements. 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, and so forth. What does that suggest to you? Mr. Kieran.
Well, it might be in a shoe shop, for instance.
Shoe shop? How do you make that out?
You have shoes 1A, 1B, 2B... Any size you want.
It's grade school.
Grade school, right?
Well, being a shoe shop, too.
I spent most of my life in 1A, I ought to know.
It could be on a questionnaire, too, couldn't it?
1A, 1B.
Various.
2A. Well, I don't think they have all of those. I think the public school arrangement that Mr. Levant refers to. You did get out of that.
Not entirely. Don't go too far on your numbers.
That gives us 2 out of 3. How about this? Raymond Hogan of Brooklyn. Identify the play in which the following things happen. Let's get 2 out of 3 on this. In the first play, the curtain rises with the family coming in to breakfast. What play? Mr. Levin.
Vinny, Life with Father.
Life with Father, yes, that's quite right. Now, in the next play, there's a contrast. The curtain falls with the family about to have dinner as the curtain falls. What play? Miss Chase.
You can't take it with you.
That's quite right. You can't take it with you.
How about dinner at 8?
I never saw it and don't know how the curtain...
They had dinner in it.
They had dinner in it. I don't know whether it was the end of the last curtain or not. Now, in the third...
They never did get to the table.
They never did get to the table? You see, Mr. Levant? You
well,
just
I never
stayed that long. You ought to see your plays out the way Miss Chase does. In the third play, food is served throughout the action. Well, more or less throughout the action.
What does that mean? Three acts?
Three acts, yes. What one would that be?
Is that the Feast of Belshazzar? Well, there's a oratorio, but they don't eat, they just sing.
If there was a play about the Feast of Belshazzar, that would be true.
What is that question?
Henry VIII.
Food is served all through the play, Mr. Adams.
Henry VIII.
In the movie, there's a lot of food served, but not continuously. Mr. Adams?
It wouldn't be the first year.
No, though there is a dinner in that.
Food for action.
No, oh, boy, we're just guessing. It's the Petrified Forest, in which the action takes place in a lunchroom. Cafe Crown, also. Isn't that in a restaurant?
Yeah, Petrified Forest, I don't believe.
Don't believe that?
I'm not sure. I only see the picture.
On the card, it says the Petrified Forest. You quarrel with the card. That gives us 2 out of 3. And sends us on to a question from Pauline Southman of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, this is a musical question. Get 2 out of 3. According to the items that are suggested by each of these musical selections, what would a lady have in her purse? In other words, the title of each of these selections should suggest to you something that a lady might conceivably have in her purse. Let's have the first.
Kitten on a key.
That of the boy.
Well,
keys, yes.
See, I'm smart.
You chose the
right
one.
I almost said kitten, you know.
Don't have kittens in the purse. Do they have kittens in the purse? I don't think so. How about the second?
Why change partners and dance with me?
Change.
It's all right into it.
You picked that up pretty well, Adam. And now the third and last. This is a tricky one. Miss Chase, you had your hand up.
Well, I think I know the title of the song.
Yes, but what would a lady have in her purse that might be suggested by the title of that song?
The Love Nest?
Mm-hmm.
A deed to
Love Nest is a piece of chocolate candy for a nickel.
That's right, yeah, sure. She might have a piece of chocolate candy called Love Nest.
I thought that was a Baby Ruth.
No, Baby Ruth is also a nickel.
No. That's an O. Henry you're thinking of. And that's enough commercial plugging for the first part of this program. Well, we got 3 out of 3 on that. How about this one from Kathleen Fisher of Lyndhurst, New Jersey? What places in the African campaign do you associate with the following people? The first is Cato the Elder. Cato the Elder. Mr. Curran.
Galinda est Carthago. Carthage must be destroyed, which the ancient town was wiped out, but I believe it's right up near where the American and British forces are fighting now. Not the Rommel action, but the other one.
And Tunis.
Yes.
Carthage was part of what is now Tunis. Cato, of course, was the...
The Roman.
Oh,
he was the Elder.
Yes, the Elder Cato, who urged the Carthage to be destroyed, and it was destroyed, as a matter of fact. How about a place...
He had to say Latin, then, because he didn't learn Greek when he was 80.
Well, what do you suppose Kieran was talking? Kieran was talking Latin.
He was talking Latin, but that was in his Cato the Elder's younger days.
How about Stephen Decatur? The place in the African campaign for the band?
Tripoli.
Why?
That was that when they wiped out the pirates there, the start of the Marine tradition starts
in the
song.
It was a war against Tripoli? About what time?
When 18.
Pick a date.
Dinner at 18.
Mr. Kieran, how about.
1814.
About 1804, I think it was, the war against Tripoli. The hero of naval battle in 1804 was Stephen Decatur. And Monroe is associated with what place in the African campaign? This is a tough one. Mr. Kieran.
Monrovia.
That's right. There is Monrovia.
Monrovia is in Liberia, isn't it?
That's right.
And it's on the southern western loop where Africa takes a bend down below the equator.
That's right.
It
and
pulls
one...
his stomach in right there, Africa.
South of Dakar.
Yes, that's one of the places where we are setting up bases, is it not, from which to send out soldiers to northern Africa. Yes, Monrovia, the capital of Liberia, was named after President Monroe. Got 3 out of 3 on that. How about this one from Marion C. Lawless of Eagle Rock, California? Can you identify for us these love affairs in which royalty or nobility participated? In the first case, 2 princes want to marry the girl, but she's finally glad enough to be a commoner's wife. What love affair is that?
I was going to say Victoria at first, because 2 princesses did, but I don't know about the commoner.
2 princes?
Albert and his brother. They had a duet there, an operatic duet for a few years.
But Albert wasn't a commoner, was he?
No, I didn't hear the question.
I wish I hadn't heard the answer. Now, it's Mr. Kieran.
Well, there was one of the British royal house that married a commoner.
I should say perhaps that these are imaginary or fictional love affairs. Yeah. Does that make it any less clear?
Is the music by Romberg and these?
No. This is never set to music.
Is it by Mark Twain?
No. Now we're just very far afield. Although the country's very nice around there, Miss Adams. Mm-hmm. It's Portia in The Merchant of Venice. You remember, who marries the commoner Bassanio, although she's courted by the Prince of Morocco and the Prince of Aragon. One wrong. Now I have to get the next one right. In this case, this is a play. The princess loves a tutor, but she doesn't marry him. Miss Chase.
The Swan.
The Swan is right. Yes, you remember the names of the characters?
William Gish.
Basil Rathbone.
Basil Rathbone and Philip Merivale were in it, and Eva Le Gallien, but I don't remember. Alexandra was
that's
the name
right.
of the princess.
Alexandra, and she doesn't marry Nicholas Agui, I think his name was, A-G-I. Now, how about the case in which the prince woke up the lady with a kiss?
Sleeping Beauty.
Mr. Kieran, were you going to...
Victory. He wakes up a goddess, which is even better.
Which is even harder. And now, before we go on to the next question, here's Mr. Cross, who wonders how our assembled experts would define the word cigarette.
Well, Mr. Fadiman, I think they'd arrive, first or last, at Webster's own very forthright definition. A cigarette is tobacco rolled in thin paper. And, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't the simple definition itself make clear that in a cigarette, it's a tobacco that counts, and that in selecting your own cigarette, it's worth your while to take a tip from the men who know tobacco from A to Z, the independent tobacco experts. These auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen who attend the auctions down south obviously see just who buys what tobacco. Yes, year after year, they see the makers of Lucky's consistently select and buy the riper, lighter, milder Lucky Strike leaf. No wonder that with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. Smokers, remember, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. That took 60 seconds. And now a question from Dave Rosen of Chicago. What I want you to do, Miss Chase and gentlemen, is to identify the situation and the parties involved in each of three brief conversations that will be acted out for us now. Let's have the first.
How many rooms? Children? How many? How old? Are you on one of those diets? Does your husband come home on time?
What's the situation? Who's talking to whom?
Oh,
Mr. Levant.
Is that when somebody wants to adopt a child? No, what's the matter with it?
I don't know. It's only a half-hour program.
Well, is it... must it be a specific, a well-known incident? In
No. It's a general incident that might take place. Oh.
Well, is that a boarding house keeper?
Who's doing the talking?
The keeper, I guess.
Boarding house keeper? Whom is she talking to?
The applicant for the
identity. You're very close to it, Miss Chase. I think it's an applicant for a domestic position interviewing a prospective employer. Wouldn't that be how many rooms, children, how many? Are you on one of those diets? Probably
a
cook.
Reverse diet.
I imagine. And does your husband come home on time? She wants to know whether you have to serve 4 or 5 meals after 6 o'clock.
I was pretty close.
What did you say?
About adopting a child.
It's more like adopting a whole family, Oscar. And now the son, let's see if we can do a little better on that.
Of course he isn't 14. He's just big for his age. Mm. Long tan? Well, you know how boys are. They all want to look older. Just turned 10. Try it, Emma.
Adam.
That's the half fare business, which doesn't obtain in my family enough anymore.
Yes, that's right.
Coquettish young mother.
Yes,
so young mother.
Maybe not so young. Yes, the old half fare gag. And now the third and last.
I want them without bones, not too long either. I hate it when they curl up. Matter of fact, my first night, I really don't need it.
A woman buying a girdle, I'm afraid.
Yes. No one's going to be afraid of. Yes, that's quite right.
I thought it was a shampoo.
As a matter of fact, it's my first and I really don't need it.
A permanent. You know, one of those shampoos that's a bit of permanent.
They don't last long.
I don't know what a permanent is.
Let's see. We got two out of... Oh, we're supposed to get all on that. So that sends a $50 war bond to Mr. Rosen and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from Mrs. Ann Butler of New York City? I want you to recite for us
three lines of poetry from different sources that mention the word honor. H-O-N-O-R-O-O-U-R. Mr. Adams.
I could not love thee, dear, so much. Love thy not honor more.
Yes, that's a very famous one.
That's
very,
only two lines.
A very, well, that's
yet this inconstancy is such as thou too shouldst adore. I could not love thee, dear, so much. Love thy not honor more loveless.
Yes, very good. How about another one with the word honor in it?
Love, honor, no obey.
I thought of that too, but that's only one line.
Well, finish the story.
No,
we'll be married.
Why, listen to that, I didn't know you cared.
I do, very much.
We have no time for that sort of thing on this program, Miss Chase. That would be perfectly all right. A single line is all right. A single line is quite all right. Love, honor, and obey is all right. It isn't a line of poetry, although it sounds like it when you get married.
Don't spoil it now.
Later on, it gets
more poetry than truth, anyway.
How about one more? Mr.
Honor thy father and thy mother. What commandment is that?
Honor thy father and thy mother is very good. Not a line of poetry, but in the Bible.
Don't knock the Bible to me.
Now that gets us three. How about another one? Mr. Kieran, you've been cogitating there.
I can't get a start on one.
He can get one on honoris causa.
Clear enough. All is lost save honor. Famous line. Mr. Chase, do you have another one?
No.
That's a translation.
Well, we use translations on this program. I speak only in French and Latin, Mr. Kieran. How about this one from Virginia Leach of Piedmont, California? If in a magazine you saw cartoon characters in these settings that I'll now describe, who would you expect the artist to be? The first setting is a ladies' club meeting. Who would the artist be, Mr. Chase?
Helen Hopkins.
Helen Hopkins, yes. And for what magazine?
The New York.
New York, an excellent magazine.
Plug, plug, plug.
Anything for Vogue?
How about this one? A man and a woman in twin beds with a dog at the foot of them. Miss Chase again.
James Thurber.
James Thurber.
Also in New York.
Yes. You don't have to do this. Right, all right. A svelte. Svelte. You know what that is, Mr.?
It's Dutch for velt.
A svelte girl in a negligee. You know what that is?
Yeah, that's an Esquire.
That's an Esquire.
Yeah.
You should read the New Yorker.
I never
it might that. Be in Vogue, mightn't it?
Who would the cartoonist be, Miss Chase?
Oh, it would probably be a photograph.
No, it's a petty girl.
Yes, sometimes they're larger than that. But it is by petty. You're quite right. Yes, the cartoonist is petty. One of the most popular cartoonists.
He's supposed to draw his daughter all the time. I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't know, but I understand he's very popular among the boys in the...
Well, his daughter ought to be. I don't know her.
That gives us three cartoonists out of three. How about this one from B. Shupak of New York City? What part of what animal is each of the following? Get two out of three. Hackles. Hackles. Hackles.
H-A-C-K-L-E-S.
Oh. Miss Chase.
Aren't those the things that rise up on a rooster when he's angry? Waffles,
yes.
Those are. No.
Yes. Hackles. Sure. That's right. Long, narrow feathers that rise up when he's angry, or I guess when he's scared, too. Do we have any hackles, Mr. Kieran, on our bodies?
Not that I noticed.
Yes. Mr. Adams, do you have a rudimentary hackle?
I had once, but I'm getting a little bald.
It's more a heckle than Mr. Adams.
Well, now, how about dewlaps? Dewlaps you'd find where, Mr. Kieran?
Dewlaps, that excess wrinkled epidermis hanging down below a bull's throat.
Yes, animals of the ox family. Oh, dogs have dewlaps too, don't they?
What are some of the, bloodhounds might, and some of the other bigger, short-haired dogs.
Yes.
Don't fowls have them too? Like
no.
Oh, no. Fowls don't have dewlaps. I don't know what fowls have. What do fowls have?
They have turkey necks.
Yes, if they're turkeys, they do. And withers. Gentlemen, those things that are unrung. Mr. Kieran.
Well, withers are, roughly speaking, the four shoulders of a horse at the high part. That's where you measure the height of a horse, for instance, at the withers.
Yes.
Well, isn't that where the dog jade winces?
That's right, on account of the saddle. That's where the saddle always, if it galls at all, it galls on the four ends.
Isn't it the ridge between the shoulder bones?
Well, that's where the ridge at the top of the ridge is where you measure.
Yeah.
At the height of a horse and hand.
I think we understand each other, Mr. Kieran. Very good. That gives us three, right? Hackles, dewlap, and withers. How about this one from Sarah J. Olson of Fargo, North Dakota? What's the island setting for each of these novels? Name the island. The first novel is South Wind. Mr. Adams.
I think that is Capri or Anacapri.
Well, that is the model. That's the original island but the name that is given to the island in the novel, and which is based on Capri, is what? Miss Case?
You had I was going to say Capri.
Well, it is really Capri, but Norman Douglas, who wrote the charming novel, South Wind, called the island Nepenthe. Isn't that something that you use to make you forget everything, Mr. Kieran's classical reference, yeah. Doubtless?
Kind of poppy juice.
It's sort of like that, yes. Won't get this one wrong, nevertheless. How about Ultima Thule? Ultima Thule is an island setting for what novel? Mr. Kieran.
Was that the island setting for Thomas More's Utopia?
No, I don't think so.
Well, that was the name of a book. You just mentioned the title.
Go ahead.
Isn't it in Australia?
Yes, that's right. That's the island. Australia, and the novel is by whom?
There was a sequence which Ethel Barrymore played a woman of 103 years old. I don't remember the name of it.
No, you got the wrong.
The Prince of Jalna, I keep thinking of.
Okay. Yes, but that's a different
one. H.A. Richardson.
H.A. Richardson.
Henry Handel.
Yes, Henry Handel Richardson wrote a book called Ultima Thule. It's really three novels. And Australia, which is Ultima Thule, is the island setting for that. I hardly think we should get full credit on
Why
that.
Why not? I said Australia.
I know, but somebody else said Henry Thule.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't. I'm sorry.
I give you credit
for it, Mr. Thule, as his title goes way back.
Oh, yes, it does. Wasn't it originally meant to indicate the islands of the around Iceland, the northern sea, sort of, Kieran? How about this one? The Great Gatsby. What's the island setting for that? Mr. Kieran?
I think it was Long Island.
The Long Island is quite right. Mr. Kieran, you think we ought to give Mr. Levant credit? He looks a little on the
I was going to say Long Island.
All right, we'll give you credit for that. We got 2 out of 3. Now, how about this one? I guess we'd better save that for the next time. Now, before we go on to that next question, Mr. Rysdale wants to give you a very graphic demonstration of a fundamental truth.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've often heard this statement. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. But did you ever stop to think how literally true this is? I have right here in my hand a package of Lucky Strikes. I take one Lucky out of the package and hold it between my fingers. It's a tube of thin white paper, round and firm and fully packed. But let's just split this Lucky Strike down the middle. And what do we see? Tobacco. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, when you buy cigarettes, you're really buying tobacco. So it's surely worth your while to profit by the experience of the independent experts who spend their lives buying, selling, and handling the leaf. Remember, with these experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, the men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Clearly, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Mr. Rysdale. And now a question from William Stiles of Flushing, New York. Who was the famous son-in-law of these people? Get 2 out of 3. The first is Charles Comiskey or Comiskey. Mr. Chairman, how do you pronounce it?
Comiskey.
Comiskey? Now, who was the famous son-in-law of Charles Comiskey? Mr. Levant?
I don't know if he's famous. He's a baseball pitcher.
Who is it?
Rigney.
Rigney is right. I guess he's famous. Mr. Kieran? Is that right?
He was. He's in the Navy now.
Well, he's still famous. Pitcher for the Chicago White Sox. He married President Tommy Key's daughter, president of the team at that time. How about Elliot Roosevelt? Who's the famous son-in-law of Elliot Roosevelt?
Who's the son-in-law?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Mr. Kieran.
I'll try. Franklin D. Roosevelt?
That's quite right, Mr. Kieran, yes. How about explaining your answer?
Well, Mrs. Roosevelt was also Roosevelt, and that was her father's name.
Yes, that's exactly right. Get it, Mr. Levant?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the son-in-law of William Godwin. The son-in-law of William Godwin. Mr. Kieran.
Yes, and I don't think he liked him very much either. T.B. Shelley, the poet.
Yes, whom did he marry?
He married Mary Godwin.
Mary Godwin.
I thought he married Mary Wollstonecraft. I like that name, anyway.
That was her middle name.
Right. That was her middle name. It took a long time to say it, yes. Did you just learn that?
No, I know Mary Wollstonecraft.
From
fact,
old.
He set out after Shelley to catch him and wring his neck.
How about this one from Mark Goodman of New York? Who is the subject of each of these insults? Let's get 2 out of 3 on this. The first is, you limp and lump of brick dust. Who is the subject of that insult, Mr. Kieran?
That was the regimental beastie, Gunga Dee.
Yes, and of course it's from the famous poem by Kipling. Now here's another insult. This is a nice long one. I'm going to enjoy it. Coward, poltroon, shaker, screamer, blockhead, sluggard, dullard, dreamer, shirker, shuffler, crawler, creeper, sniffler, snuffler, wailer, weeper, earthworm, maggot, tadpole, weevil. Who's being insulted, Mr. Adams? Or do the names of your friends crowd so readily to mine?
Is that an insult? That sounds
do those rhyme?
Pardon?
Do those rhyme, some of them?
Yes, some of them rhyme. How about a guess, Adam? Mr. Sheeran, Chase? It's Robin Oak Apple, a character...
Oh, that's right.
Where, Adam?
In, I think Ruddigore.
Ruddigore is right, yes. I have to call that wrong, nevertheless. Who is the subject of this very simple insult? Most uncommonly fat. Most uncommonly fat. Mrs. Chase?
Called that?
No, I don't think he was fat, all right, but I don't think he was called that, Mr. Chen.
Father Williams.
That's right.
You've grown most uncommonly fat, yet you turned a back somersault in at the door. Pray, what was the reason for that?
That's right. That's pulling out of the hat. That's not a very easy one to get. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3, and unfortunately, that is not enough to send Mr. Goodman a $50 war bond. And I think that's all we have time for. Thank you, Miss Chase, for helping with the party tonight. Now, in a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guest. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out just one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and that means one $50 war bond. And speaking of bonds, the other day, I heard about a private down in Fort Riley, Kansas. This private was watching some girls trying to sell war stamps to the folks lined up at a moving picture box office. And they just wouldn't buy. Finally, the soldier said, very quietly, "Look, why not just tell them if they can't afford to buy stamps, they can't afford the movies?" Well, they sold $20 worth in 10 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, that soldier down in Fort Riley, he was talking to you and to me. Now, next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be with us to spread their particular brand of Christmas good cheer. And our guest... Well, we're going to have 2 guests. One of our guests will be our old friend, Judge James Wallace of the New York Court of General Sessions. You remember the judge is that outstanding baritone who was turning down offers from Metropolitan Opera House after each appearance on Information, Please. Now, with Judge Wallace, ladies and gentlemen, we hope to have another famous vocalizer known to all listeners. He's authorized us to announce that he'll do everything he can to be with us next week, which, as you know, is Christmas night. Now, he may be unable to make it, and if he is unable to make it, it'll only be because the unusual pressure of his duties at this particular moment may prevent it. Now, this may seem an odd, even a mystifying way to announce a guest, but if you understand what we mean, when we inform you with special pride that our second guest may be our favorite expert and yours, a great public servant, Mr. Leon Henderson. Now remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we'll listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs,